the floor. All this happening so fast. Thomas could see only two of the remaining cranks, running around the room with no logic to their movements. Thomas had nothing in his hands. Teresa randomly aimed her gun without taking a shot, probably scared that she'd miss and hit Aris or Rachel. Someone crashed into Thomas from behind. Arms wrapped around him as he hit the floor face first, his nose cracking in pain, the breath whooshing out of his chest, leaving him empty. He panicked, squirmed to get away from whoever had tackled him. Teresa yelled his name. He saw her feet right next to him. "Help!" Thomas tried to say, but it came out as nothing more than a muffled grunt. The crank behind him had released his grip and now put a hand on the back of Thomas's head, pressing his lips into the carpet to silence him. Thomas had no other thought now than taking his next breath. He couldn't get the slightest wisp of air into his lungs. Knees dug into his back, pressing his ribs so hard they'd surely break. The boom of a gunshot rocked the room. The pressure lessened on top of Thomas, and then it was gone completely. He lifted his head just in time to see the crank topple off him and slump to the ground. A bloody hole marked the side of his temple, and signs of life had already fled his eyes. Thomas looked up at Teresa, who was trembling, still aiming the gun at the same place where she'd shot it.
"There's two more," Thomas said,
feeling the detachment in his voice. Teresa recovered, took a deep breath, and positioned herself defensively, aiming her weapon at the other sections of the room. Thomas, hurting all over, forced himself to his feet, looking around to make sure he didn't suffer another surprise attack. There were no signs of the remaining two cranks. They must have hidden behind one of the many couches or chairs clustered around the rec room. Thomas pulled off his backpack to look for syringes, while his friends carefully made their way from chair to chair, couch to couch, peeking behind them. So far, nothing. Then Teresa screamed, and just as Thomas looked in her direction, he saw her disappear behind a couch, dropping with a hard thump. Thomas ran for her, his heart erupting into a rapid drumbeat. He'd left everything behind him, his pack, all the instruments of death it contained. It felt as if the air solidified, slowing his speed. No other sound had come from Teresa's direction, and Aris and Rachel were too far away to help. He reached the wall, slammed his shoulder into it as he looked behind the sofa, saw Teresa on the ground, a man's arm wrapped around her throat. She fought him with both hands, to no avail. He squeezed and squeezed, making her eyes bulge and terrible sounds escape her open mouth. Choking, gurgled sounds.
"Let her go!"
Thomas shouted. Words would mean nothing to this crank. A bald man, sweaty, a huge gash across his forehead. Dr. Levitt. It was Dr. Levitt. Blood mixed with sweat dripped down into his eyes, which were red-veined and fierce. Teresa, struggling, reached for something on the floor just beyond her fingers. The gun. Thomas picked it up, felt the life of his best friend fleeing as if through the air, leaving her rapidly in the arms of death. He'd never actually fired a pistol before, worried about his ability to aim. Placing his finger lightly on the trigger, he returned his attention to Teresa and the crank once known as Levitt. The man hadn't relented, his arm a closing vice of flesh, and Teresa's skin had turned a frightening shade of purple. Thomas threw aim to the wind and jumped on top of them, landing stomach to stomach on Teresa, her face mere inches from his. Their eyes met, sharing the pain and fear. Levitt used his other arm to swat at Thomas, his meaty palm slapping him in the side of the head. Thomas pulled up his hand, sliding the tip of the gun along the floor beside Teresa's body. Up and up, past her ear, to the crank's head, to the side of it, to the temple. Levitt's face suddenly transformed, losing all its malice and empty hate, turning into a pitiful, childlike plea. His arm's grip on Teresa loosened.
"Please,"
the man whimpered.
Please don't hurt me.
Thomas pulled the trigger and ended it. The shot was like a crack of thunder, the crack of the world splitting. His ears ringing, he grabbed Teresa and pulled her off her dead attacker. Thomas had never much liked him anyway. She trembled in his arms, a rare show of weakness after such a terrifying ordeal. He wrapped himself around her and held her tight. Eris came up behind him, put a hand on his shoulder, but Thomas didn't turn to look.
"Where's the other one?" he asked, barely able to speak. "There should be one more."
"Rachel got him," Eris replied. "Don't worry. They're all dead."
Thomas held on to Teresa as if he'd fall to the center of the world otherwise.
"I can't take much more of this,"
Rachel responded from somewhere nearby.
"Six," she said. "There's only six left."
By lunchtime, they'd killed the remaining cranks. Compared to the nightmare of what they'd had to do in the rec room, the rest were a piece of cake. All asleep, their lives ended with the stab of a needle and the flow of poison. And that was it. The purge was over. Chapter 52 2:31.6.7 12:45 p.m. What a world Thomas lived in. Illness, death, betrayal. His friends subjected to cruel trials that might never mean a thing. A world baked, lying in ruin. A month ago, he'd helped murder more than a dozen human beings in a matter of hours. And every day since, he'd lived in a pit of self-loathing and guilt, avoiding his friends at all costs, even living in a complex bursting to the seams with so-called psychs. No amount of therapy had helped him cope with the horrors of the purge. Nor would it ever. He was changed. At least he understood that. He'd even stayed away from the observation room lately, too depressed to watch the maze. But today, he'd forced himself to come in and catch up. The first thing he noticed was a display that showed Albie and Newt walking beside one of the huge glade walls. But something was off. Newt leaned into Albie, who had an arm draped across Newt's back, helping him stand. Newt could only put his full weight on one leg. He lurched with each step, his face grimacing in pain. Thomas sat down at the controls, took a moment to settle his mind on how to go about what he wanted to do. Then he started the meticulous process of finding the correct camera angles he'd need to put together a story. What in the world had happened to Newt? Less than 2 hours later, Thomas had spliced together a series of camera clips from various beetle blades, the closest to a continuous feed that he could accomplish. It showed a tale that just about broke Thomas's heart. On the large display screen in the middle of the wall, he started it up again from the beginning. Early in the morning of the previous day, Newt had been totally fine. He said goodbye to Minho and the other runners. It was Newt's day off from running, apparently. After the different groups disappeared around their respective corners, Newt spent some time walking around the glade, checking on the various sections as if everything in the world was normal with him, as normal as things get living inside a giant maze. He spoke to Winston over at the Blood House, then chatted with Zart by the small cornfield in the gardens. Newt even laughed a little, once slapping Zart on the back as if he'd just told a great joke. Newt wandered over to the deadheads next, the grove in the southwest corner outlined by dying skeletons of trees that, to Thomas, always seemed like a premonition of bad things to come. There, Newt plopped down on a bench and sat for at least 30 minutes. Thomas forwarded the feed to the point when Newt finally stood up and walked into the tiny forest. The view switched to a beetle blade's low perspective
as it crawled along just a few feet behind him. Newt headed straight to the cemetery, where wooden posts marked the places they'd buried those gladers who'd met their demise since entering the maze. He knelt on the ground there, staring numbly ahead, eyes glazed over, his face sinking further and further into despair. He sat that way for a long time, and Thomas thought he could guess what was going on inside his friend's head. Debilitating guilt over all those who died, thinking that maybe he could have saved them somehow. Sadness over the situation as a whole, the danger, the boredom, the frustration at not knowing why they were there. Frustration at the loss of memories, and perhaps on some deep level, he was remembering the sister they'd wiped from his mind. Newt stood up. He turned away from the graveyard and marched out of the deadheads, walking so swiftly that the beetle blade providing the camera view bounced as it hurried to keep up. Newt left the woods without slowing down, heading straight toward the west door, the closest one. Several gladers waved at him or called out a greeting, but he ignored them, staring straight ahead with grim determination. Thomas sat up straighter, already knowing the end result of this and maddeningly curious as to how it happened. Newt left the glade proper and entered the corridors of the maze. His gait didn't slow, his pace hurried but steady. He turned left, then right, then left again. Several more turns. Finally, he came to a long stretch where thick ivy covered the walls on both sides. He stopped next to the one to the left and faced it, leaning forward onto his hands, which disappeared in the greenery. He paused for a moment with his head down, then looked up, craning his neck as if he wanted to see the very top of the wall. Newt reached out and started climbing the ivy. His muscled arms made it look easy. Gripping one vine, he'd pull himself up high enough to find purchase somewhere in the stone with his feet. Then he'd grab another vine, and another, using both hands, both feet, and all his strength. He scaled the stone and ivy, reaching the halfway point between the ground and the false sky in a matter of minutes. Thomas knew that this was where he would think he couldn't go much farther. A combination of built-in optical illusions and pre-programmed repressors within his implant would guarantee he'd never make it to the top. He did climb several more feet, then he stopped, looking toward the sky, beaten. Thomas watched and waited. Newt clung to the ivy on the wall, his whole body almost disappearing behind the greenery. A beetle blade that had been scaling the wall at his side crawled up and stopped within just a few inches from the boy's face. Not for the first time, Thomas wondered about the software that ran these little mechanical creatures. How did it know what to do when no one was around to feed them instructions? Newt looked directly into the camera, and for the first time in this constructed feed, spoke so that Thomas could hear what he said.
"I don't know who you people are, but I hope you're happy. I hope you get a real buggin' kick out of watching us suffer. And then you can die and go to hell. This is on you."
Newt let go of the vines and kicked away from the wall, plummeting out of the camera's view. The beetle blade hurried to reposition itself, and all Thomas heard was the rustling of its movement and then a distant, hard thump. The view bounced its way down to the ground, then locked on Newt. He was lying on his side, with a leg pulled up, arms wrapped around it. He rocked back and forth, groaning. Those groans turned into sobs, a deep, painful cry that made Thomas's chest hurt. Newt suddenly let out an anguished howl, then screamed into the air,
"I hate you! I hate you!"
Thomas turned off the feed. He couldn't take it anymore. He already knew that someone had saved him, pulled him out of the maze back to the safety of the glade, and he couldn't bear to watch one more second of it.
"Newt. Newt. Newt," Thomas thought.
feeling as if the very air around him were turning black.
You're not even immune, man. You're not even immune.
Chapter 53 231.9.22 11:17 a.m. Thomas heard a gentle knock on his door and opened it to see Teresa. Things were almost back to normal at Wicked Headquarters, as much as possible after something like the purge had happened.
"Hey," he said, groggy. "You could have just buzzed my head. I was taking a nap."
In answer, she held up a tablet.
"Did you see this?"
"Huh?"
He had no idea what she was talking about. She stepped into his room, brushing past him as he closed the door and sat down at his desk.
"Come here and look at this. Did you send a mass memo out? Or did Dr. Page ask permission to use your name?"
"What? No."
"Well..."
She gestured to the glowing screen. Thomas leaned in to take a look. Wicked Memorandum, date 231.5.22. 2. The Replacements. From Thomas, subject A2. Re. The Purge. "I take total responsibility for what we've had to do over the last few days. What we have to keep in mind, though, is that Wicked is alive and stronger than ever. The maze is up and running, and our studies are in full swing. We're on the path, and we can't stray from it. All I ask is that what we've done here remain within the organization and never be referred to again. What's done is done, and it was a mercy. But now every waking thought has to be devoted to building the blueprint. Ava Page is the new chancellor of Wicked, effective immediately." Before he had time to process it completely, Teresa took the tablet back from him.
"And look at this other one I found," she said, as she searched for something else. "Supposedly sent by Chancellor Anderson the very day before he typed up that crazy one we saw on his workstation about his fingers. There's no way he wrote this. Check it out."
She handed the tablet back to him. "Wicked Memorandum, date 231.5.4. 2. Fellow Partners. From Kevin Anderson, Chancellor. Re. My farewell to you all. I hope that each one of you will forgive me for doing this in such a cowardly manner, sending you a memo when it's something I should do in person. However, I have no choice. The effects of the flare are rampant in my actions, embarrassing and disheartening. And our decision not to allow the narcotic bliss within our compound means I can't fake it long enough to say goodbye properly. Typing these words is difficult enough, but at least I have the ability and time to write and edit in the small windows of sanity left to me. I don't know why the virus affected me so quickly and so viciously. I deteriorated far quicker than almost all of the original group. But no matter. I've been decommissioned, and my replacement, Ava Page, is ready to take charge. The elites are well into their training to serve as the link between us and those who will continue to run Wicked. Ava herself admits that her purpose is almost more like that of a figurehead, with our elite subjects the true rulers. We are, and will continue to be, in good hands. The noble cause we began over a decade ago will see itself to fruition. Our efforts, and for almost all of us, our lives, will have been spent justly and for the greater good. The cure will be built. Honestly, this is more of a personal note. To thank you for your friendship, your compassion, your empathy in the face of implementing such difficult tasks. One word of warning. It gets bad in the end. Don't fight the time of your decommission. I did, and now I regret it. Just leave and end the suffering. It's become too much. Thank you. And goodbye."
"What is this?"
Thomas said, completely bewildered. That's not how it happened at all.
What's she trying to do, rewrite history so she looks more legit in the future?
Teresa shrugged.
I thought you'd want to see it.
Come on, he said. We're going to talk to her.
Thomas knocked on Dr. Page's door until she finally opened it. He was so upset he could barely catch a decent breath. The doctor looked surprised.
Is there a problem?
She asked.
Why'd you do it?
Thomas asked, trying to stay calm. He felt betrayed, confused, and above all, angry.
Writing memos from other people's accounts is your thing now?
It helps the others deal with our current situation, Thomas,
Dr. Page said, her surprise transforming to a bemused understanding.
Gives them a better sense of order. It also shows how involved you are in this organization and how mature you've all become.
She smiled at Thomas. She looked proud of him.
And I think it's a simple but symbolic way to create a bridge in everyone's mind, a link between the old and the new.
Thomas didn't know how to respond, what to say. Why would she make him seem so important? And why would she send something from his messaging account without asking? Not to mention from Anderson's, their leader at the time.
This does all that, she continued, while having the focal point of one person. It's the best of both worlds.
Still, he didn't respond.
You could have at least asked him first, Teresa said.
Dr. Page gave them a genuine enough look of regret.
You're right. I'm sorry. I got way ahead of myself.
It's not okay, Thomas said.
He turned and walked away, scared he'd say something he might regret. Dr. Page was full of lies. Just full of them. Thomas went straight back to his room. He told Teresa that he wasn't feeling well, and he returned to his bed. He closed his eyes and tried to calm his thoughts, rolled onto his side, wishing for sleep.
Everything felt different. He couldn't tell Teresa what he was thinking, and almost everyone he knew or cared about was inside the maze. And now these emails. It was just weird. If Dr. Page was devious about that, what else was she hiding from them? He wished he'd said more when he confronted her. But instead, he'd chickened out. And here he was, staring at the wall of his room, thinking. Thinking. That was the worst part. If only he, Teresa, and Chuck could run away and start a new life together. But then he thought of Newt, about his friend falling from the wall, and how he wasn't immune. They needed a cure. And if they found one, everyone would be released. Albie, Minho, Newt, Chuck, Teresa, even Eris and Rachel. Maybe they could all live in the same neighborhood, grow old together, sit around and stuff themselves with food and tell their kids stories about the time they'd saved the world. He pictured Minho in front of a big group of kids, acting out the life of a runner. But for some reason, he kept making giant ape movements, tickling his armpits, pounding his chest. If only it were that easy. Imagine Minho acting goofy in front of future grandkids, and all would be well. That thought came up again. What now, more than ever, felt like the right thing to do. He wanted to go into the maze. Anything to be out of this place, back with his friends, and on to the next stage. Anything to get this cure done and done. Get to the happy future. He just wanted to lie to himself and do it. The future, a crank-free world, he and his friends living in paradise. Talk about a load of crap. He let out a deep breath and then, despite its being the middle of the day, he fell asleep.
Chapter 54 231.10.31 4:48 p.m. Thomas was back in his haven, the observation room. Over the last few weeks, the guilt and anger had continued to build,
slow trickles that joined to become a deluge. And now he was drowning. There was only one way he could ever bring the air back into his lungs. Being here, watching his old friends in the maze. He and Teresa had grown distant lately. She seemed to have coped with her own difficulties after the purge by throwing herself, mind, body, and spirit, into work, work, and more work. But Thomas didn't mind. They spoke often enough through their telepathy to keep each other informed. Enough to know that they both were doing what was best for them. And for Thomas, that had been to stay out of sight as much as possible. He had to stick to the normal regimen of tests, checkups, and classes, but other than that, he made himself scarce. Unless Chuck or Teresa were available to hang out, Thomas spent most of his free time in his room, reading or sleeping, or observing his friends in the maze, watching their every move. Those moves had become pretty routine, the gladers establishing themselves in a pretty impressive little community. Law, order, routine, safety. No one had died or been stung for a while now. Thomas still loved eavesdropping whenever he could, listening in when Albie, Minho, and Newt would sit down for meals. It made Thomas feel like a part of them, almost like he was there. And that was exactly what he'd been doing all afternoon, switching between views and microphones when one scene grew boring. At the moment, over by the east door, Newt was talking to Minho, who'd just returned from running the vast maze itself.
"Anything new out there?" Newt asked, the sarcasm obvious. "Did a bloody griever come out and ask for a snog?"
Minho leaned against the stone, still catching his breath.
"How do you know? I told him maybe some other time. Not really my type."
These two had some variation of this conversation almost every day, mocking the monotony of what the runners found in their daily excursions. They'd started walking toward the map room when Thomas heard a knock at the door behind him. Sadly, he pulled himself away from the world of the maze and returned to Wicked.
"Who is it?" he asked.
The door opened, and Chuck's curly head poked through.
"Hey, Thomas! Dr. Campbell said I could have 2 free hours to help you with your notes. So?"
"Come on in, you shank. You don't have to act like it's a big deal every time."
He and Chuck had started using some of the slang words invented inside the glade, just between the two of them. Chuck's favorite was clunk, by a long shot. Dr. Page said the psychs were really interested in how the memory loss affected the gladers. Sometimes there were surprises, like the invention of totally new words. A few of them came from Minho, who'd had quite the mouth even before entering the maze. The swipe seemed to heighten the trait, which the psychs also found interesting. Of course, the psychs found everything interesting. Chuck came in and sat beside Thomas, plopping down in his seat with an exaggerated sigh of contentment.
"They sent Frank in today, which means I only have 1 month left."
The mix of excitement and fear in Chuck's eyes always broke Thomas's heart a little. He shared as much blame for the fear part as anyone. It had been his own selfishness having Chuck in here so often, seeing some of the bad things that happened inside the maze. But the kid was his brother in every way but blood. Without him in his life, Thomas would have broken long ago.
"It'll be here before you know it," he said.
"Which means," Chuck said, "that all of this'll be over before we know it, too."
"Yep, you got it."
"What did you do today?" Chuck asked. "Let me guess. Medical checkup, classes, critical thinking, observe the maze."
"Yep, you got it," Thomas said again, making the boy laugh. "Pretty exciting life I lead, am I right?"
"Just wait until I get to the maze," Chuck replied. "I'll liven that place right up."
He said it with an enthusiasm that Thomas could only guess was genuine. Kids that young had a knack for remembering only the good parts.
"Yep, you got it."
The third time made even Thomas laugh. Then he stood up.
"Sorry, I have a meeting I'm supposed to go to."
"Aw, come on. I just got here. I was hoping to watch the gladers eat dinner.
I think Gally and Albie are finally going to beat the clunk out of each other tonight.
Sorry, bud, Thomas said. And you know you can't be in here without me, so head to the barracks. Later we'll grab food, come back here, and do more glade spying. Maybe the Sykes will send a griever in to dance for them.
Chuck paled a little at that, but did his best to cover it up. Sometimes, in his excitement to get to the glade, he forgot about the monsters.
Sorry, Thomas said, wanting to kick himself. Terrible joke.
The meeting was in a small conference room, and Thomas arrived knowing absolutely nothing of its purpose. Dr. Page sat at the head of the table, with two people to her left who were obviously Sykes. One was from the days before the purge, a lady named Campbell. The other was a newbie, from Seattle or Anchorage or who knew where. Thomas purposely didn't bother learning details like that. He couldn't put his finger on why. To Dr. Page's right, a middle-aged man with dark hair and brown skin sat with a girl who could have been his daughter, age-wise, but not genetically, by the looks of it. She had fair skin and dirty blonde hair, and the man leaned toward her as if he knew her well, as if they'd just been whispering. Thomas stood there for a long moment, everyone in the room assessing everyone else. Dr. Page stood up.
"Thanks for coming, Thomas. You've made yourself scarce lately. Helping Chuck prep for his big trip to the maze next month?"
She smiled innocently, as if she didn't know every single move he made every second of the day. Thomas didn't like her nearly as much as he had before the purge.
"Something like that," Thomas said in an even tone.
"Well, please sit down,"
Page replied, motioning to a chair opposite hers, across the table. After he was seated, Thomas asked,
"So what's this all about?"
Dr. Page held up a finger, looking annoyed.
"Just a moment. Teresa should be here any second."
On cue, the door opened again, and Teresa came bustling through, offering a few nods of greeting before sitting next to Thomas. She always looked so busy, so preoccupied.
"Hi,"
she said to him, sending as much warmth along with her greeting as she could.
"Good to see you," he replied.
Truer words had never been spoken. He missed her. Dr. Page got down to business.
"I want to introduce a couple of new friends who will be helping with some upcoming projects."
She turned toward the two newcomers to her right, the man and the girl he seemed to hover over.
"This is Jorge and Brenda. Jorge is a Berg pilot, a very good one, and Brenda has some training as a nurse, with big plans to become a psych someday. Isn't that right, Brenda?"
The girl nodded, not showing a hint of shyness or awkwardness.
"Whatever it takes to find a cure," she said.
It seemed like an odd response, but something haunted hid behind her eyes, something that probably explained exactly why she'd answered that way.
"Hola," the man named Jorge said, looking each of them in the eye for a moment. "I am excited to work with you."
"Work with us?" Teresa asked. "What's going on?"
He'd gotten Thomas's attention. He was now madly curious.
"We'd like you to help us on an upcoming expedition," Dr. Page said. "In a few weeks, Jorge, Brenda, and quite a few others will be sent to a place called the Scorch. We're very interested in what we may find inside a nearby city infested with cranks. Significant research potential."
"A city infested with cranks?" Thomas repeated.
He had a bad feeling he wasn't hearing the whole truth here.
"Yes," she said, offering nothing else. "And we think it will be valuable to have you there. We'd like to test the long-range effectiveness of your implant technology, especially the remote monitoring of your killzone patterns and other measurements. We need to know it can work at long distances. Now, here's what we have planned."
Thomas worked over what she'd just said, tuning her out. Why would they need to know about long-distance monitoring? Was Wicked planning on moving them somewhere? There was more going on here that they weren't telling him, and he had a bad feeling about it. A feeling he'd had for a while, but could only now admit to himself. It made him feel sick.
wicked was never going to stop. They were never, never going to stop.
Chapter 55 2:31.11.30 8:32 p.m. Thomas walked with Chuck down the long hallway, which seemed to stretch out infinitely before him. That was how everything felt today. Long and never-ending. Really, he was just in a sad mood. The day had finally come. Chuck was going to be inserted into the maze. Thomas had asked for this hour with Chuck to eat a last meal of sorts and talk through things. Their own goodbye. Then Thomas planned to leave Chuck in the hands of the experts and make himself scarce. He didn't think he could handle watching Chuck get his memory erased, see him handled like a corpse, watch him get thrown into the box like a heap of trash. They'd have their goodbye, and then Thomas could hide in his room until the next morning rolled around. The cafeteria was quiet during the lull between the breakfast and lunch crowds. After grabbing plates of breakfast leftovers, he and Chuck sat down by one of the few windows that looked out over the Alaskan forest. They'd barely talked since Thomas had retrieved Chuck from his room, and now they both picked at their food. Neither had actually taken a bite yet.
"I might as well get the dumb question out of the way," Thomas finally said. "You scared?"
Chuck held up a limp piece of bacon and studied it.
"You're right. Dumb question."
"I'll take that as a yes, then."
Chuck chomped on the bacon, his face wincing a little.
"Tastes like clunk."
"Of course it does. They fried it almost 3 hours ago."
"But your one wish for today was to sleep in, so they let you sleep in.
Maybe your wish should have been for crisp bacon. Or, you know, a one-way ticket to Denver."
Chuck gave him a polite smile, the most adult thing he'd ever done.
"Come on, man," Thomas said. "Open up here, buddy. Tell me what you're thinking, what you're feeling. I'm worried about you."
The kid shrugged.
"Do we really have to get all cheesy like this? They're sending me into the maze, and there's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to miss it here. Going to miss you guys. But there's no point whining and crying."
"You'll have to go a while without seeing my beautiful face every day."
"You better be whining and crying. I'm talking puffy eyes, wet face, snot pouring into your mouth, the whole bit. I don't see that in the next 3 minutes. I'm going to be offended."
"What happens after I get there?" Chuck asked,
acting like he hadn't heard a word Thomas just said.
"I mean, this can't go on forever, right?"
And just like that, all the air drained out of the room.
"Of course not forever," Thomas said. "I hear they're getting close to a full blueprint. And once they have that, the cure's next. I'm sure we'll be reunited before too long."
Thomas didn't know if he could actually count all the lies he'd just told on one hand. But what did it matter? Chuck was about to have his memory wiped, and Thomas didn't think it could hurt to get his hopes up a bit. Chuck was staring at him.
"What?"
Thomas asked. Chuck told him he was full of something, and he didn't use the word clunk.
"I am not," Thomas rebutted. "Look, man, you're right. We don't need to get all cheesy. We're saying goodbye, but we'll both still be inside this huge complex, and I'll be watching you, rooting for you. Always, I promise."
"I won't even remember you," Chuck said. "So it's really like we're saying bye forever." "No, man, no."
Thomas got up and went to the other side of the table, sat right next to his friend.
"I was just thinking about this recently. There'll be a time in the near future when we have a cure, and we'll all be living in the same neighborhood, rich, fat, and happy. Everyone will have their memories back, and life will be sweet. Just look forward to that."
"If you say so."
"I say so."
"Okay, then."
The boy smiled, then looked away, the swell of a tear threatening to spill from his eye.
"Sounds good."
"You know what?"
Thomas said.
"We don't even need to say bye. Byes are too hard. I'll just get up and walk out, like no big deal. and then I'll see you when I see you, okay? No sayonara is necessary.
Chuck nodded, but when Thomas made the first move to get up, his friend catapulted forward and pulled him into a hug, squeezing him fiercely with both arms.
I'm gonna miss you, the boy said through a sob. I'm gonna miss you so much.
Thomas hugged him back, his own tears dropping into Chuck's hair.
I know, man. I know. I'm going to miss you, too.
They might have stayed that way forever, but Dr. Page sent someone to summon Chuck, and she gently escorted him away. His look back right before they left the room just about shattered Thomas's heart. He sat at the cafeteria table for a long time, imagining Chuck in the maze. Imagining Chuck being attacked by a griever. Chuck starving or dying of thirst. He imagined Chuck dying 100 deaths, and no one doing anything to help. He thought of Newt, of Albie, of Min Ho. He thought of Teresa. Something grew hard deep inside Thomas's chest. For now, he had to go along with whatever Wicked wanted of him. But that wouldn't always be the case. An idea occurred to him, a ridiculous, ridiculous idea. A plan. Teresa had said once, long ago, that someday they'd be bigger. And now they were.
What if I saved them? He thought. What if I saved my friends?
Chapter 56 231.12.11 10:46 a.m. It was only Thomas's second time on a berg, and the first he could scarcely remember. At first he hated it, his stomach bouncing and churning, waves of nausea filling his mouth with saliva. But when he got used to it, he kind of liked it. Then he hated it again. Being inside the large flying beast was exhilarating, unlike anything he'd ever experienced. Living in such a ruined world really made you appreciate something so powerful that even gravity couldn't keep it down. Teresa hadn't come, staying back to do her part in testing the long-range abilities of their implants. Every day they grew more distant. She buried herself in Wicked and their mission, and Thomas sometimes hesitated to tell her what he was thinking. But they needed to have a talk. A big talk. Soon. Thomas looked out one of the viewing ports set into the floor of the berg. He watched countless landscapes flash by below him, in complete and utter awe. Despite the devastation that had been wreaked on his planet, it remained beautiful. Breathtaking. Greens and blues and oranges mixed with lots of pale brown. Of course, this high up, you couldn't see the details. You couldn't see the cranks and the starvation and the poverty and the terror. No wonder back before the sun flares, every kid wanted to be an astronaut.
Hey!
He looked up and saw Brenda, who'd been busy with Jorge, prepping all their supplies for the Crank City expedition. They were also delivering a bunch of equipment to the Scorch for Wicked, for reasons no one shared with Thomas.
Hey there, he said back. You guys about ready?
She sat down next to him.
As ready as we'll ever be. Jorge made me check everything about 100 times. He likes to be prepared.
When are we supposed to get there? He knew almost nothing. But the land below had already started to look like a desert, various shades of red and orange and yellow taking over the palette. There were almost no signs of life, or that life had ever been there, for that matter.
I think a half hour or so.
She rubbed her hands together, and her expression looked strained.
Man, I'm getting nervous. This all sounded like a fun adventure until about 10 minutes ago.
What's there to be scared about? Thomas asked.
A post-apocalyptic city with no government or security, surrounded by a desert and swarming with cranks. I mean, come on. Don't be a sissy.
He flashed the girl a quick smile to let her know he was joking. Brenda rolled her eyes.
Or,
he said with exaggerated chagrin.
It could be scary.
You should be nicer to Teresa, you know, she said after a long beat of them staring down at the wasteland. The hum of the Berg's engines so soothing, Thomas suddenly wanted a nap.
What do you mean?
She obviously feels strongly about you, and it just seems like you haven't been that nice to her. Sorry if it's none of my business. Thomas thought about it, a topic he usually tried to avoid in his own mind. No, it's okay. She's my best friend. We've been together for more than half our lives, and we can talk to each other like no one else can, without even speaking sometimes. Maybe that's why it seems like I'm not nice. Brenda nodded as if that made sense to her.
Just friends? After all this time?
I've never seen you two holding hands or kissing or anything.
You're one slow mover.
She laughed at the last part. It's complicated, Thomas said, surprised at this conversation, the things it was making him think about.
She means the world to me, and nothing will ever change that. But it's kind of hard to be romantic when you have a dying world outside your home and your friends are stuck inside an experiment.
Brenda seemed disappointed.
Yeah, but come on. People love, Thomas. Best of times, worst of times, people love. You should make sure she knows how you feel. That's all I'm saying.
Thomas felt a surge of emotion he didn't understand. He thought of his mom and his dad and his friends. And it all just welled up inside him, and tears began to leak from his eyes. He didn't know what he needed in life or what he was meant to accomplish. Friends were what he had, and they were all that mattered. Somehow, he had to save them. Brenda noticed his tears, and her face melted into something so soft and full of kindness that Thomas shook. She pulled him into a hug, and he hugged her back, felt like he was hugging everyone who'd just flashed through his thoughts. They stayed that way, pressed together, until the Berg tilted to the right and started its descent. They'd arrived at the Scorch. Wicked had sent armed guards with them, and they spilled down the open ramp first to the dusty, blistering hot ground below. When they gave the all clear, Thomas walked down with Brenda and Jorge, all three of them squinting against the blinding brightness of the sun.
"Good glory," Brenda said. "Imagine what it was like down here when the flares actually hit."
"You sure you don't want to come with us, hermano?" Jorge asked. "We're going to have ourselves quite the party."
He and Brenda both laughed, but Thomas had a hard time finding anything funny about it. This place was terrible. The Berg had landed surprisingly far from the Crank City, and the technicians Thomas was supposed to work with were gathering their things as if they intended to go in the opposite direction. He saw nothing that way but a wasteland, which made him more than a little nervous. He found himself anxious to head back to Alaska, and hoped the tests they wanted to run didn't take terribly long. Thomas shielded his eyes and looked toward the city. It appeared to be several miles away. Dirt and rust and shattered glass made up half of it. Ruined skyscrapers reached for the sky like broken fingers. It was hard to believe anyone could live there, even cranks. Beyond the devastated city, mountains rose. The sun flares might have taken some of its plant life away, but the stone and soil seemed to call out, "We're still here. What else you got?" Thomas tore his eyes away from the scene and saw Brenda staring at her soon-to-be new home.
"You sure about this?" Thomas asked. "You sure you want to go into that place?"
He'd meant it to be a little light-hearted, but he knew how serious it was as it came out of his mouth.
"If we had a cure, a lot of people I love would still be alive," she said, gazing unwaveringly into the distance. "People like my mom and dad. People like my brother."
"I know, I know," he murmured. "Believe me, I know."
"That's why Jorge and I volunteered," she continued. "Not just in general, but for this.
She nodded toward the broken city in the distance.
I have to do my part.
Yeah, he said. Before he could add something nicer, Jorge yelled that his group needed to get going. He wanted to be in the city well before the sunset.
Be careful,
Thomas said, trying to communicate with his eyes that he was sorry. That no one else should have to give up their life for this sickness.
Seriously, be careful. I will, she said. Hard to believe they're going to bring your friends out here next, huh? Poor guys. Well, see you later, alligator.
She gave him a feeble wave, then hurried after Jorge.
Wait, what did you say?
He yelled. She didn't respond, running farther away. He stared at her for a long moment, noticed the sands shifting beneath her feet.
What did you mean?
He whispered.
Chapter 57 231.12.11 4:40 p.m. Phase 2. That was all he could get out of the wicked technicians he'd been assigned to. Phase 2. He asked each one of them about what Brenda had said, and those were the only words he got back. Other than things like, "Go ask Dr. Page. It's not my place to talk about it. I'm just doing my job." But none of that mattered because Thomas knew exactly what was going on. He should have seen it long before Brenda let it slip. Wicked planned to send the Gladers into this wretched place for another phase of trials. That was the reason they wanted to test the long-range monitoring of his implant technology, so they would know how effectively they'd be able to do it with the others once they were there. The lies just stacked up higher and higher. Things were even worse than he'd imagined. Far worse. If there'd been the tiniest seed of doubt before, it was now gone completely. No matter what it took, Thomas was going into the maze to save his friends. The scorch got nastier with every step. He walked with the wicked technicians across the hard, dead land, gripping a towel beneath his chin. He'd wrapped the rest of it around his head to shield himself from the sun, which beat down on them, raining pure heat. The only relief was a breeze, though it covered him in sand as well. They were heading for some kind of underground tunnel, where they supposedly needed to run tests and set up equipment. And now Thomas knew what for. As he and the others trekked across the wasteland, he had plenty of time to think over his budding plan to save his friends. It could happen. It really could. He just needed to convince Wicked of two things: insert him into the maze, and do it without erasing his memories. For any kind of plan to work, he had to have his mind intact. Only then would he know how to get them out. There were details to figure out. How, when, and where to get weapons. How to shut down the Grievers. Where to go if they did somehow escape the Wicked Complex. But he had time. It really could work. He tried to stay that positive and kept moving through the desert. One foot in front of the other, sweating profusely. On and on they went.
Here!
The man leading the group eventually yelled out. The others crowded around him as he dropped to his knees, then felt around in the sand. He swept away a thin layer of dirt and revealed a metal hatch with a simple handle on top. It didn't even have a lock to secure it. What were the odds of someone stumbling upon the tunnel entrance out here in the middle of a ruined nowhere? A woman leaned in and took hold of the handle, along with the man, and they heaved the covering up and open. Thomas stood on the tips of his toes to catch a glimpse over someone's shoulder. A long flight of stairs disappeared into darkness below.
"Believe it or not," the woman said, shouting over the wind, "there used to be a prison nearby. This was an escape route built by the cartels. We just adapted it for our purposes. It'll be about another hour's walk down there."
She didn't say anything else, just began descending the steps.
One by one, the group followed, Thomas going down last. It was a long, surprisingly cool, unsurprisingly creepy descent into the depths and down the endless tunnel that Wicked had commandeered. No one spoke much as they walked and walked and walked, but when they did, it was usually in a whisper that echoed like a ghost's haunting call.
"Almost there,"
a man named David announced, spooking Thomas. He'd become accustomed to the quiet, and the sudden voice jarred him from his thoughts.
"Almost where?"
Thomas asked, his words bouncing back at him off the walls.
"There's a flat trans up ahead that we installed on our last trip here. It's finally ready to be activated." "A flat trans?"
Thomas repeated. Was that how they planned to transport the gladers to the Scorch?
"Yeah,"
David replied.
"Let's hope it works, because that's how we're going to get back home tonight."
Thomas almost stumbled when he heard that.
"You have no idea how much these things cost," the man continued. "Before the flares, only billionaires could afford them. There were even some governments who only wished they'd had enough money to get one." "Wicked's that rich?" Thomas asked.
David laughed.
"They don't need to buy this stuff. They just steal it from billionaires who are too dead to care anymore. Or too cranked past the gone. Anyway, don't worry. Once it's up and running, there's nothing to be scared of. It's a cool way to travel, that's for sure."
"Here we are,"
a woman called back. She shined a light on a tall rectangular structure that looked like a large door to nowhere. Or, more accurately, a doorframe that was missing its actual door. A panel of controls, dark at the moment, was attached to the right side of the device. David moved forward to stand next to the woman.
"We've run every test imaginable. All that's left is to turn the sucker on."
Thomas stepped away from the Wicked staff as they pulled out tools and began doing their jobs. He didn't know any of these people very well, so he felt like a total outsider. He went to the wall of the tunnel, just on the edge of the pool of light, and leaned back against the dirt and stone. He folded his arms, watching the people go about their business. A humming sound filled the air that made his bones rattle. A green glow lit up the control panel of the flat trans. The hum grew louder. He couldn't believe that in a matter of minutes, he was going to step through a magical wall of engineering and reappear thousands of miles away. It made him nervous, made him worry he'd end up scattered across the quantum universe, nothing but a galaxy of atoms and molecules that had nothing to do with each other. A loud buzz made him stand upright. Then a shimmering wall of staticky gray filled the space between the rectangular frame of the flat trans. It wavered, flashed into and out of existence a few times, then held steady. The soft, continuous pulse of its energy made the skin on Thomas's arms tingle. He was really going to do this. He was really going to walk through that wall of power.
"All signs are steady,"
David announced, looking at the display screen on the control panel.
"Sending a test item now."
Then, like a kid standing beside a lake with a skipping stone, he tossed his flashlight through the flat trans. A few seconds later, it popped right back out, and he caught it. He laughed.
"Guess we're good."
"Who wants to go first?"
a woman asked.
"Thomas? How about you?"
She gave him a teasing smile.
"Actually, yeah."
Not knowing what had come over him, he squared his shoulders and walked straight for the flat trans, trying desperately to show no hesitation or fear. He figured if there were any cause for concern, they'd stop him in the few seconds it took to walk from one spot to the other. But no one said a thing. A couple of them let out a whoop. One person clapped. Thomas stepped right into the shimmering wall of gray. Chapter 58 231.12.11 9:32 p.m. A plane of cold passed over his body as if he'd stepped into a deep pool of icy water. But then it was over, as quickly as it took to step through any door. Several people waited on the other side, in a room he'd never seen before. Dr. Page was there, as were Teresa.